Hi, this is Victoria Schnepps, president of Schnepps Media, and delighted today to have with me the one and only Randy Mastro, who wears multiple hats, but to me, the biggest hats right now are his being co-chair with Alec Baldwin of the Hampton International Film Festival, and maybe more importantly to all of us, the deputy mayor of the greatest city on earth, New York City. Welcome, Randy.
Pleasure to be here, Mickey.
Thank you. So glad we can catch up with you. It's a momentous time in our history, I think. And you're living it. You're there. You're at the seat of power.
It is a momentous time, but it's a real gift that I appreciate every day to be back in city government as the first deputy mayor. In fact, you happen to be catching me on a day when, for a change, the mayor is out of town, so I'm the acting mayor.
I love it. May I bow to you,
Well,
acting mayor?
please, please.
Well,
I
but no,
call these
I
the
used
glory hours. The glory hours.
to.
Anyway.
Well, when I see Eric, I usually give him a kiss. So I send you a kiss because, the job is such an extraordinary one. What piece of the pie of the city, being the deputy mayor, I know you must overlook everything, but what is your actual, kind of responsibilities on a day-to-day basis between being the acting mayor?
I think the most important things, I've been on the job for a little over 6 months. And most important thing we do in city government is the policies reflected in the budget that we do. Of course, public safety is priority number one, and supporting public safety in that budget, including thousands more police officers, is something that we take great pride in. So we have had record reductions in crime, but also so many other programs that you can fund and leave a lasting legacy. So I really push here a policy agenda and get the mayor's priorities and policies reflected in both the budget, in legislation, and in the inherent authority that the executive branch has. So, for example, this mayor wanted to have universal after school, first mayor to do that. I think that's a huge achievement. But also in our public schools, made sure that every kid gets a Chrome device so they have a computer to work off of, no matter what their economic station. So I am very proud of this mayor for doing that. These reflect his priorities and his policies, and that's so important. And what we see coming out of that, while he's no longer seeking re-election, it's a legacy to be very proud of because. Yeah, on crime, we have record lows in major categories like shootings and murders. On jobs, we have record highs, more jobs than at any point in city history, including more private sector jobs. And on affordable housing, which is such a focus in this year's election, affordable housing and housing being produced at an unprecedented rate in city history. In fact, more of it being produced. Shovels in the ground and through rezonings in the 4 years of the Adams administration, and then in the 20 years of his two predecessors.
It takes my breath away, that people didn't recognize and understand his tremendous accomplishment that you've just rolled off your tongue because you know so well. I don't know how we resonate messages that this could not be understood by the people.
I say to people that he's had so many accomplishments. I've only been here for 6 months, so I can't take credit for them, but I will. But he has had remarkable accomplishments as mayor, and I think history will be very kind to Eric Adams. He's the first to admit that he learned on the job. It's a big job. Nothing really prepares you for being mayor of New York City, which is often referred to as the second toughest job in America.
Yes.
And so he acknowledges he learned on the job, trusted some people he shouldn't have trusted, and it caused certain distractions in those earlier years. But none of that went to the heart of what he did as mayor and what he's achieved as mayor. And I think that it's a legacy to be proud of, and that history will be very kind to Eric Adams.
Well, I wonder if there was, now you have the last months of till the end of the year that he will be mayor. Are there any what we might call last minute agenda items or things in your wish bucket that you want to see finished?
Yes, there's always things we'd like to do, and we're still churning out major policy initiatives one after the other. Most recently, the mayor decided the time had come to end the horse carriage industry in our city. Too congested a city, too congested in the Central Park, so the Central Park Conservancy came out against them. A series of horrific incidents. One horse died, at least three instances of horses getting loose and running wild in the park, causing injury to passengers. It's not right for our city any longer as a matter of public safety and as a matter of humane treatment of animals. So we're going to do everything we can to see that that happens in these final months in office. Every mayoral candidate favors getting rid of the horse carriage industry. So hopefully the stars are aligning. The mayor is leading on this issue, meeting the moment. Others are following and supporting. So hopefully it will get done.
Well, that's been a decades-long battle, right, to get the horses off the streets. And
Yes.
it's been a tug of war, I felt, between whatever forces pull the direction. So this will be historic if that can get passed. What's the process?
Well, it depends on legislation from the city council. So we hope that Speaker Adams will join Mayor Adams in meeting the moment and seeing that this happens before the end of her tenure. If it doesn't happen before the end of her tenure, and there's legislation pending sponsored by almost a majority of the city council, just in terms of the co-sponsors. But if it doesn't happen by the end of the year, it's going to happen inevitably because every mayoral candidate supports banning the horse carriage industry.
There's a way to put what they call that, the cherry on the sundae of his tenure, to have that as a finishing moment would be a powerful thing. I'm going to make sure my AM New York makes sure we do some editorials to support that, because I think it's the right thing to do. As you said, it's a time and place. Are there I'm very involved in children with special needs and autism. And I was wondering, I know that the funds come from all different worlds into helping kids with special needs. Is there some place in the world of your involvement? You have a great Department of Health. I think it was Matthew Katz, who is the commissioner.
Mitchell Katz is the head of the Health and Hospitals Corporation, the city's
Okay.
very large public hospital system, largest in the country. Dr. Michelle Morris is the acting commissioner of the Department of Health and Mental Health Services, and they're both involved in those areas, as well as the Department of Education, which has essentially a third of the city's budget is dedicated to public education. Much of that to special education matters and helping those kids who have special needs.
Well, obviously, with all the homeless problem of mentally ill folks, that I don't know what the exact percentage is, you could share with me, of how many of the homeless are truly mentally ill people. And your challenge with the civil rights folks to say, well, their right to live on the street, how are you able to handle that?
This is such an important subject, and I'm glad you brought it up because to me, when you say, what is the one thing you would like to have achieved since you returned to city government? I wish we made more progress in helping the disturbed homeless get off the streets and get the care and treatment and services that they need that they too often are incapable of getting for themselves. And that's because exactly what you said, Vicky, said so much of that population, disturbed homeless population, has either mental illness problems or addiction problems or both. Addiction may be an even bigger percentage, but a very large percentage of the street homeless population, by some accounts, 70, 80%, suffer from mental illness or addiction problems, and that's why they stay out on the streets, even though the city has a large shelter population, lots of housing available. In fact, under New York state law, we have to provide housing for the homeless. But these folks can't help themselves. And under restrictions in state law that have occurred, people who claim to be, civil rights advocates, actually what they're doing is hurting that community by making it so much harder, for us to be able to help them get the help that they need. But right now, unless you're a danger to yourself and others, you can't be involuntarily committed for a time until you get stabilized. So many of the treatments involve drug therapies and other medical and social services, whether it's a mental illness problem or an addiction problem. But someone who is addicted, they're taken off the street, for lack of a better term. They will dry out, and then they're capable of going back out on the street, and they make that choice instead of getting the help that they need to deal with their addiction problem. And that is just a shame. That is not humane treatment. And those civil rights advocates who self-describe civil rights advocate who think the humane treatment is to leave people out on the street, that is not humane. It's not good for quality of life in our city, but it's not good for that distressed population that needs our help. And sometimes the helping hand means you have to take a firm grip to help somebody who can't help themselves. And the law will have to change. But Mayor Adams, has proposed legislation that would allow us to do more to help those with addiction problems and to require them to get treatment. But again, it's a vexing problem, a vexing problem, both because it does affect quality of life, but because it's just not humane to allow people to remain out on the streets who can't help themselves.
Can government have, we were named plaintiffs in the Willowbrook consent decree, which closed Willowbrook, which is now the College of Staten Island. But everybody who was leaving Willowbrook had to have a day program. Sadly, there's never been a class action on behalf of the mentally ill to force the treatment of these folks so that there was funding and the ability to give them what they need. And at the time, they just closed up the institutions like Creedmoor, but they didn't have the programs in place that they were forced to have each person leaving have a home and have a program. Is it too late to do a class action lawsuit on behalf of the mentally ill?
Well, as someone whose first love is the law, it's never too late to bring a lawsuit. But the pendulum shifting has resulted in some strange and unintended consequences. There was a period where the Willowbrooks, and we all watched it on TV, and I think Geraldo Rivera was one of the great champions of getting rid of Willowbrook and exposing that, going back to the 1970s, right?
Right. Well, he was my, I was the mother he filmed.
There you go. So,
And so I
but
know the
and it
whole
was,
story
and it
inside and
was a,
out.
and it and the treatment there, it was a screaming scandal. But that doesn't mean you go from one extreme to another. You don't go from the extreme of you close it down and then release everyone. You have to have more humane treatment. And
How do
I
we
think,
catch up, Randy?
right, so I think that we do have more humane treatment now, but the law has swung in the direction of protecting the quote unquote civil rights of those individuals to remain out on the street. And that's so we have gone too far the other way.
Well, I'm very terrified with President Trump sending troops into cities that he himself decides are not safe. And when he shot off Oregon, Chicago, and New York, I said, "Whoa, stop." I mean,
Stop at New
it's.
York. No need here. We are the safest large city in America, and we, as I said before, we have re record low levels of major crime, down double digits in almost every category, and at record lows in shootings and murders. So we don't need the National Guard here. And since there has been such a reduction in crime, and the president does seem to be listening, And recognizing that we are in a different position than some other major cities in this country. We have the best police department in the world. We've got a mayor committed to public safety. We do not need the National Guard here. Thanks, but no thanks.
Well, this one of the big quality of life issues, of course, the police have done a great job, is the still the homeless. When people see homeless, is there anything that you have been able to do to, because you have reduced the number of people on
Yes,
the streets? How'd you do it?
it's true, and it's a real concerted effort that involves not just a law enforcement component, that involves social service agencies and health agencies and sweeps that embrace those on the street, get them off the street, and try and convince them to get into treatment. And thousands have been helped as a result of that. But crime and public safety. It's a matter of perception catching up with reality. The reality is that we live in a much safer city today than when Mayor Adams came into office, and much safer city today than it was decades ago when I last served as a deputy mayor. In the prior administration, the Dinkins administration, we had over 2,000 murders a year. Now we're down to around 300. That's
Oh my.
300 too many, but that's remarkable when you compare them,
Yes.
right? And so, but how do you change perception? You change perception through addressing quality of life. That's why we added 1,500 cops just to focus on quality of life crimes. That's why we work so hard to get the distressed homeless off the streets and out of our subways. That's why we've cracked down on e-bikes, not waiting for the city council to act through legislation. That seems to be where legislation goes to die. We did it by regulation, 15 mile an hour speed limit, all sorts of equipment to identify the delivery workers and drivers so that you could enforce cracking down on the unsafe, uncertified ion batteries that implode into fires, and getting city bike Lyft to change their speedometers. They're half the bikes out there, to maxing out at 15 miles an hour. So we've made tremendous strides in that regard, and I think people will really see that too. And of course, it's about cleaner parks and streets, vacant lots, homeless encampments, parks that aren't clean enough. We added to our budget double shifts for park cleanings and a lot more sanitation cleaning, including of empty lots. So that you see, our streets are getting cleaner and our parks are getting cleaner. Though these all contribute to a sense of quality of life improving, and that leads perception to catch up with the reality that we are living in the safest large city in America.
Well, we're very nervous now. We're talking about a new mayoral race coming in November and the decision of our city to see which way the city will go after this tremendous quality increase. What do you see between Andrew Curtis and Mandami? What do you see? You're a political professional.
Well, now that Eric is no longer seeking re-election, and obviously I very much believe that he deserved re-election, I've said publicly that I intend to vote for Andrew Cuomo. We're not a socialist city. I will never vote for a socialist. We tried that Democrat socialist working party's family thing once before, just before Eric Adams. And it didn't work out so well in the de Blasio administration. And this socialist has the impetuousness of youth, meaning he's probably more of a true believer than de Blasio was, who actually had experience in other jobs, actually had some life experience. This guy never had a job before the assembly. What was he like? A rapper living at home? I mean, I don't understand it.
Well,
I
from his
don't.
penthouse, not from his home, from his penthouse.
His parents' home. Yes, his parents' home. Yes. So I don't think people appreciate what a complex job this is, what a difficult job this is. And I give you just one example of how little sometimes these folks, who aspire to higher office and espouse socialist policies, don't understand how government works. Early on in his campaign, he said he wanted to build 100,000 units of affordable housing. That was his commitment. We've blown those numbers away. We've already created shovels in the ground, more than 100,000 units, and we're going to create hundreds of thousands of units through rezoning over time. So he doesn't really even appreciate what can be accomplished because it is being accomplished, and he didn't even see it. Another example, he tweeted out recently that he wants to spend $100 million on immigrant legal services. Well, that means he would be cutting the immigrant legal services budget of the city that we just passed unanimously with the city council of $120 million for such services. So he's actually, pledged to cut by $20 million. I don't think that was his intent, but he just doesn't understand how government really works, what we're really doing. It's just such a profound responsibility, and it takes experience. And he just doesn't have it. Plus, we're not a socialist city. We're the financial capital of the world, right? We're not a city where we ban people and threaten to arrest them from foreign countries because we don't like them. We are the home of the UN, where foreign leaders can come here, whether we like them or not, and participate in international debate. But here's a guy who, wants socialist policies, wants to arrest world leaders when they come here because he doesn't like their politics, right? And he's actually behind a smile and a good social media campaign, one of the most divisive candidates in city history. Wants to go after the 1%, wants to go after the business community, wants to go after, the leader of Israel and the community he comes from. We're the largest Jewish population of any city in the world. I mean, he's been anti-police and law enforcement, wants a civilian board to decide the future of cops when there are civilian complaints and not have the police commissioner involved in ultimately making those decisions. The ramifications for our city, a city being less safe, a city being more divided, a city government not supporting the business community that contributes so much of the tax base and the jobs in our city, not supporting the police who have done such a great job in making our city safer. And of course, taking some pretty extreme positions on issues that, I think a lot of members of certain communities, including the Jewish community, find appalling. It's scary prospect that he might be elected mayor.
Well, I think the forces that be, I think, testing democracy.
Well, we have in this country right now, we have politics of the extreme. And there are days when we look at what's going on in Washington, and it's scary how extreme the right-wing politics can be. And we look at what's going on in our city right now, and the prospect of the extreme left socialism in our city, it's scary, right? So the extremes are scaring the hell out of me, when I think most Americans are in the middle.
Well, let's see what the election brings, but there is some light of moment, and that is your devotion for 33 years to the Hampton International Film Festival. How'd you start getting involved?
So, a very dear friend over the past 30 years is Stuart
Oh, of
Suna.
course I know Stuart. He lived in my late husband's home. He grew up with my stepson, Harvey Eunice.
Well, there you go. Well, Stuart, and he and his family ran Silver Cup Studios for many, many years. And Stuart was the chair of the film festival, asked me to get involved, asked me to do some pro bono legal work for the festival. And then when Stewart decided after 18 years as chair to step down, he said, with no sense of irony, there's such big shoes to fill, it's going to take two of you. So I want Alec Baldwin and Randy Mastro to be co-chairs. And we both agreed. And it's been a great pleasure working with Alec. Alec had few years there where he stepped back and dealt with,
Well, yes.
some issues that he had to deal with, and thank God he came through the other side stronger than ever. And now he's back as a co-chair, and it's just a wonderful experience. And I know I see you there at the events, Vicky. I know how much you enjoy them. The films are amazing. We had the Academy Award winning Best Picture 11 years in a row screen at the festival. It's become a
Like a
feeder on the way
Sundance
to the
Film Festival,
Oscars.
right?
And we had the Academy Award winning Best Film last year, Anora. Already in the first weekend, I've seen a lot of great films. The one innovation I can take credit for is that we expanded from a 5-day festival over a Columbus weekend to an 11-day festival over 2 weekends. So many great films to come. The festival goes through October the 13th. So many more great days ahead. And I look forward to seeing you at some more events, Vicky.
Well, I'm here to advocate, since I live in Quahog, which is right near Quahog, which is next to West Hampton Beach. We have a fabulous Performing Arts Center movie theater,
Yes, you
and
do.
we would like to see it brought west. So, and I saw Stuart. He said to me, "What are you doing here so far away?"
So it's a well,
So I
that's
say
the
to him, "Well, why don't we have something? And I'd love to help you and Maria Moore, the town supervisor, would love to work with you guys to see how we can bring it to West Hampton Beach to
I.
add to your Hampton reach."
Well, it is called the Hamptons Film Festival, and even though most of the screenings occur in East Hampton, we're also having screenings in Southampton and in Sag Harbor. And we have historically, there have been years where we did some screenings in West Hampton. So we got to revive that, Vicky. We got to
Okay,
revive
let's
that.
do it. Let's open up the book, and the wonderful director there, Julianne, would love to talk with you. So how do we get the ball rolling? Who should we talk to once this is over? Once you're breathing again.
Well, we are a little busy right now,
Yes,
but
of
as soon
course.
as the festival is over, we can talk about how we expand into West Hampton as well. And
Wonderful.
I'll put folks together with our, leadership team. We have a great staff. Hopefully we can make it happen again. Because about 10 years ago or more, there were screenings in West Hampton.
Yes, well, West Hampton Beach has been reborn, and I'll have to have you come for lunch to see the beauty of the town because it truly is as pretty as the prettiest of Hampton towns. And of course, I call the Hamptons my happy place. It's such a beautiful place to be. But I'm so grateful to you for putting your time and effort and brilliance into making it something so powerful. I want to just close with, do you think Mayor Adams is going to come out and endorse Andrew?
I don't want to get, the one reason why mayors have trusted me over the years as a confidant, why I think I'm the only person in city history to have been the top deputy mayor and acting mayor under two different mayors of different political parties, is because I don't get ahead of the mayor.
Well, I think that's a good way to say that the mayor, this wonderful Eric Adams, has done an extraordinary job. And I'm so glad you're with him because, he needs the support of great people around him because I believe we're as good as the people around us. So I'm so glad you're in City Hall. And today you're actually mayor. And we are speaking to Randy Mastro, the deputy mayor. But today the mayor's out of town. So I am speaking to the mayor of the greatest city on earth and the co-chair of the Hampton International Film Festival. Thanks for your time, Randy.
Thank you, Vicky. Nice to see you.
This is Victoria Schnepp saying bye now, till next time. Thank you.